Blog Talk Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to our Maryam Blog Talk Radio program. We'll get things underway shortly. We're going to give ourselves a moment for listeners to log in. Those of you that are joining us on the internet chat side, feel free to enter questions as we open up the discussion, and we thank you all for joining us. If you receive the link, then you have the picture of the article that we're going to be reading and that we're going to be sharing today, and that our conversation is about everything singles should know about marriage. This article is very interesting because I've had this conversation. I've been thinking about, you know, maybe inviting some to join in on this conversation as we go along. So while I'm pulling up this article, we're going to take a moment and we'll be ready to roll shortly in sharing what we have for our discussion today for our Maryam Blog Talk Radio.
That brought us all the way over here. Was it a dream? Was it a dream? And the agonizing crying, so many tears. Was it a dream? Was it a dream? And the subsequent subjugation for 100 years. Was it a dream? Was it a dream? Many generations suffering, living in fear. Was it a dream? Was it a dream? No amount of reparations can heal all of that. Only the Lord of the world can redeem. And the separation from loved ones that we hold dear. Was it a dream? Was it a dream? And the languages we had, we were forced to not hear. Was it a dream? Was it a dream? And the calling out to God who is always near. Was it a dream? Was it a dream? And the resounding answer that's ever so clear. Was it a dream? Was it a dream? Reparations can heal all of that. Only the Lord of the world can redeem. Divine intervention.
Okay. Excellent. Well, we are back, and we thank you all for joining us for Merriam Blog Talk Radio. What you just heard was from our community's own Rashad Shahid, and we are very happy that we have a selection of music that we could share in the meantime, in between time. Culture is just so very important. So that was my little PSA for the moment. So today's conversation, we're going to talk about, you know, things that single Muslim men and women need to consider in preparing themselves for marriage. If you received the email, then you would have gotten the link for the article in which I'm going to be reading from. And you can also find this article on a website called Babel Voices, which is a blog website for parents and families where they share information in different blog articles. You can find it on Babel Voices, B-A-B-B-L-E, Voices, and you can also find it on blackandmarriedwithkids.com with the writers. The article writers is by Lamar Tyler. So the article is titled, 10 Things Every Single Needs to Know About Marriage. One thing that I found that was really intriguing about this article is that it's a conversation that many single men and women don't really have as far as, you know, well, am I ready? You know, am I ready for marriage? I mean, we have the desire and the drive to want to be married, to be in a marital relationship, and that desire and drive can be driven by one thing, but then maybe there are things within us that's keeping us away because we're not looking at those internal things that we need to do for ourselves to be fully ready for marriage. A lot of times we may think that marriage will solve the problems that we may feel that we have or are facing in our world. And that's not always the case, which is indicated in this article. Some of those things that we assume are a reality for us or that we look for to be a reality for us, which oftentimes are not really a reality. So I want to share this article and then kind of go through each one. And I encourage our listeners that if you have any questions or comments, or maybe there might be something on this list that may be missing, that we should add or that may be particular to our situation as African-American Muslims. So let me share this article. The world is filled with people who desire marriage but have no idea what real marriage life entails. We often run into people who share that their parents have been married for decades, but they still don't know how they overcame issues that arose. All of these issues are resolved behind bedroom doors, so their children never got to see the resolution or the process that preceded it. Since that is the case, we thought that we would help you out. On the next few pages, you will find information that no one ever tells you before you get married. Taken to heart, the information on these next few pages may keep you from marrying the wrong person or getting divorced once you make that step. Check out my list of 10 things that every single needs to know about marriage. After you read this, let me know if you have anything, if I left anything out, or if there's anything here that you don't already know, or if this list is dead on. So I put that out to our listeners, as well as this is a chance to be a part of an online conversation as well in regards to this subject. But before I go into this list, I want to introduce our expert in the matter who will be along with us on this conversation, my father and Imam Fahim Shuaib. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you doing today?
I'm very good. I'm doing really good today, feeling good. I'm enjoying this weather and enjoying having some type of downtime after having such a busy week. So, yeah, I'm good.
Excellent. We're here.
Okay, great. So here's the first one. The first one is, marriage will not fill the void in your life. Some people think that a loving spouse will make them whole, but that is far from the truth. One of the best things that you can do to prepare yourself for marriage is to work on you before you say, I do. That is such a powerful statement because, you know, you hear the quote-unquote romantic statements, you complete me, without you I can't breathe again, you know, just all of these different statements that, you know, they sound decorative and fun like anything else, but, you know, our subconscious mind always absorbs other information. It doesn't really get the poetic part of whatever it is that we're was being portrayed, though it might feel good to hear. But the reality is being a complete and whole person, it allows you to be a complete and whole person with your mate. So that's the first one, not allowing the marriage, not thinking that marriage will fill a void in your life. And I think that's important in all areas, not just physically, but not even but financially, or, you know, I can't seem to reach my goals. If I had someone to support me in doing those things, that I would be able to reach my goals that much better. Me personally, I don't find that to be completely true, though it does help. I think that it's a helping factor, but I don't think that it is the end-all, be-all, that is the excuse for it not to. So, Imam, if you would like to chime in and get some feedback about that particular point, that marriage will not fill a void in your life.
Yes. One of the, I don't know what you call it, I mean, you may know a little more on the marketing side of it even than me, but, okay, Merriam is a brand, right? Merriam is a brand. It's what we do. What we do is we deal with relationships top to bottom, in and out, and the like. And one of the main products, lost a better description, of Merriam is the concept of syzygy. It's the concept of syzygy. This is one of those critical things. That is, if you want to know what are some central ideas that Merriam promotes or prescribes, one of them right there near the top, right along with temperament, is syzygy. And syzygy is, again, that combination of synthesis, S-Y, the zygote, Z-Y-G, and then the ending Y, to talk about the quality of a thing. So syzygy is the quality of having both your masculine and feminine aspects integrated, meaning you're well-balanced, you're whole in that regard. So when you talk about, when you feel, if you can feel and you genuinely feel and you honestly feel and you deeply feel that there is something missing in you that requires a person outside of you to feel and complete, well, then there's your problem. There's the problem right there, because you have to be able to be whole and complete standing alone by yourself. You have to feel that you are enough as a person. You have to be able to look at yourself and speak to yourself and see yourself and say to yourself, I love me. I'm good. It would be nice to. I would prefer to. I would like to have someone to share lives with. Not just they share my life, I share their life, and then we share each other's life. But I have a life, right? And it's not that my life is going to begin when this person, whoever they might be and wherever they might be, comes into my life. That is a problem. It's very clear. It should be very clear that is a problem. If you don't think that your life can begin or that your life can be complete until and unless somebody else that you don't know comes into your life. Okay, so no, that's not something that we accept. The other dimension of that is there's this need to rework in our perception, of course, as far as Muslims are concerned, the hadith of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam that says to marry is half of the faith. It's a little complicated. I'll put it like that. I think it's a little complicated because we're not used to thinking in the ways that I invite people to think when they think about that hadith. And that is this, where it says to marry is half of the faith. Okay, when you are married, meaning that when you're in the state of marriage, when you can say, I am married, not just that we had a ceremony today. That's where we just begin there. Doesn't mean just because you had a ceremony that you are married. because you had a ceremony, you have decided to commit to each other's mutual nourishing and commit to each other in the bond that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and His Prophet has prescribed for you. I put it in the spirit. I say take it in the spirit of where the desert Arabs say, we believe. But Allah says, don't say to them, no, don't say you believe, but say you have submitted, because faith has not yet entered into your heart. So I say in that perfect ideal of actually being in a state of marriage, when you have the ceremony, you say, I do, you're just getting started. You're not married yet. You're going to be married when you get through the commitment, the assessment, the adjustments, the recommitments that are required in order to get to that liyaskunu ilayha, where Allah says, in order that you might find tranquility, in order to get to that real stability, that real tranquility, that sense of permanentness that I am saying is the capital M-A-R-R-A-G-E. It's going to be a minute before you actually get to that. But you got started. You made a commitment when you said, I do, I do. It says, but when you do get married, when you get to that state where you have arrived at that state with another person, that's half of the faith. That's half of the faith. And I'm saying that people take too literally, too simply, too concretely, the idea that to marry is half a religion. What are they doing? They're going out there putting two bodies together. They go out there and putting two bodies together, and then 2 minutes later, you've got two separate bodies, right? And one, quote unquote, as it said, failed marriage. So no, it starts with, yes, getting yourself together with yourself, understanding yourself, being satisfied with yourself, being pleased with yourself. And I know we got 10 other things to get to. I will say this one thing, because there's so many things that are popping into my mind that Quran gives us that we hardly ever relate to marriage and relationship. And one of them just now is the idea is that soul at complete rest. Return to your Lord, pleased and pleasing, right? That's a prescription right there also that says you first have to be pleased with yourself, okay? If you're not pleased with yourself, you can't be pleasing to anybody else. So if you look at yourself and you can say, well, I'm not pleased with myself. I mean, if you're not really pleased with yourself, no, that's a very serious absence. So if you think that it takes somebody else for you to be pleased with yourself, therein lies the problem. So, yeah, you got to be pleased with yourself first. You got to be whole with yourself first. You got to be comfortable with yourself first. You have to be rationally, righteously, and in a balanced way in love with yourself first. And then all that's going to exude from you, and inshallah, you'll find someone like you who will enjoy sharing their lives with you, and inshallah, they too have this wholeness and this self-appreciation and self-esteem about themselves.
Okay, great. Well, let me just ask this because you just brought up a thought in my mind. Like you said that we enter into the marriage complete and loving ourselves, and you know, yeah. The thought that came to my mind was, When you enter into the marriage, because you said once you're in the marriage, then that is when the half of the religion begins, right?
Right, that's when you start. You planted the seed with I do, okay. I do.
Okay, and then from that, does the rebuilding start all over again? Because you do start to learn things about yourself, you know what I mean? So don't you, isn't that a rebuilding all over, like you're, you know, I'm trying to avoid saying born again, but you do enter a different kind of womb to come back out.
Oh, absolutely. No, it is exactly as you said. Because the idea is that there's death and rebirth. I mean, it starts for as far as, like we say, syzygy, right? When we talk about syzygy, then you have zygote, right? Zygote. Where did the zygote come from? The zygote came from the meeting of the male sperm and the female egg, right? And so when the egg exists as an egg, it exists as an egg. Sperm exists as the sperm. But then when the two come together, both of them die as their individual selves, and they come to birth as a unit called the zygote. So there was the death of the egg and the death of the sperm, but the death of the egg and sperm gave birth to the zygote. Okay, well, that metaphor, that picture continues even when the two species, male and female, when they come together in marriage, then she dies as an individual woman, and she dies as an individual woman, and she becomes a wife. He dies as an individual man, he becomes a husband. They die as individuals, and they become a couple. Okay, so it is a death and a rebirth that's actually taking place, and it's a constant, and that's how it is. We're always going. He said, and this is what God says: every soul shall have a taste of death, and God is not to be frustrated from changing your forms into forms that you don't know. And that's how that's the nature of our life. The nature of our life is transformation. And marriage is one of the most transformative experiences that an individual can have.
Okay, excellent. Well, which leads me to our second one. Our next one on the list is that marriage is not 50-50. Marriage is not 50-50. Marriage is 100-100. In order for your marriage to thrive, you have to give everything that you can at that time to the relationship. 50% just won't do in the relationship. Of course, that brings Teddy Pendergrass to mind.
He's
like, it's so good loving somebody when somebody loves you back, right?
And I don't
believe that is what they mean on that list, but it means that, you know, it's just like, okay, I'm just going to do just enough. I'm just going to do just this much. As opposed to really dedicating oneself to the long-lasting life of the relationship. But it's asking for you to come with your whole self and for your mate to come with their whole self as you're building and preserving the relationship. So what's your thought on that?
Yeah, it goes back to, and we're going to keep, you know, putting this out there, reiterating, but it goes back to synergy again, right? But it goes back to syzygy. Syzygy is a combination of two whole individuals, right? Two whole individuals. I have to be whole. She has to be whole. We have to be whole. I mean, that's the ideal. But now, okay, we're going to deal with the real, and you can bring that back up. The real being that very few of us, you know, frankly, I don't know any. I don't know anybody personally. But I can say, wow, this person's syzygy has been intact, was intact, because their parents were intact and their parents modeled for them the right way to be a male or a female, man or a woman, and therefore they got it all right. And so they were totally balanced and boom. So I don't know anybody like that. I think all of us at one level or another got some imbalances from our parenting, our socialization. That's just the way that it is. Many people, those who, if they're fortunate enough to arrive at this state of true integration, true individuation, true syzygy, it was because they became conscious of it, they developed it, they practiced it, and they became comfortable with the balanced aspects of their psyche, the masculine and the feminine. Okay, with that being said, the intention of each one, whether they are actually well-formed in the manner that I'm describing or not, the intention of each one has to be to come wholly into the relationship and not leave part of yourself outside of the relationship, but recognize that it is a total commitment. It is a total commitment to the other party and vice versa. In fact, it's called ukhd nikah. Marriage in al-Islam is called ukhd nikah. It is tying the marriage knot. And we used to describe in our marriage khutbah, sometimes it comes up, but not always, but the idea is that when you tie a knot, you don't know how to distinguish one side of the knot from the other. You know, imagine a shoelace. You know, when you tie that shoelace, you know, you have, if you took the left side of the shoelace, taken from dividing it equally in the middle and the right side of the shoelace, and you can't really say which side is the left side and which side is the right side. It's all tied up together. So in the same way, when an individual comes, they bring their whole self into relationship. And that's also what the Quran actually says about al-Islam, too. So when Muslims marry, he says, come wholeheartedly. You're supposed to come wholeheartedly into al-Islam. And what that means is that you apply yourself totally to everything that Islam invites you to. And so if it's an Islamic marriage, then you commit yourself in the way that Islam would have you commit yourself totally to the marriage. So the idea is that it's not a partial commitment. It is a full commitment, and you bring all of you to that, the object being to be successful as a couple.
Okay, excellent. So number three is there are no deal breakers. When you get married, you need to put all your chips on the table and bet on your future, what you've learned from talking to couples who have been through all types of situations. Is that there is no true deal breakers. We've seen couples survive and thrive after great challenges. If both of you are dedicated to the marriage, you can make it work. So I mean, that always is like who's in the ring. You know, it's like who's fighting for this, and it's difficult to be striving to save and preserve a relationship if the other individual in there is not. Putting that same level of dedication to want to save and preserve it by taking whatever those steps are in order to ensure that that union is kept together. What are some ways that you think do help, married couples to preserve and stay in, you know, because not an easy task, but to stay involved and committed to what the relationship is? Are there things that you should, like, look for prior to making the commitment that helps you to know that, yeah, this is someone that will be worth fighting for? I want to go into this journey with them.
Well, I think in my last comment when I talked about the ideal and the real, this is very, very important to deal with the ideal and the real. We know that these authors who we value and appreciate the commitment they have to the institution of marriage and the contribution they make in terms of that information, but in the fundamental state, they don't have the paradigm of Islam in their view. So to say that there are no deal breakers, well, yeah, there are some deal breakers, as the Prophet said, sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Says the most hated halal is divorce. The most hated halal is divorce. So divorce is halal, but it's hated in al-Islam. So, I mean, so if something does go down that is contrary to the objective that the marriage was brought together for in the first place, to such an extent that the individual cannot preserve it, well, then that will be the case. Now, here's a Quranic reference that should be kept in mind when it comes to you're trying to hold on to a marriage. One thing outside of the Quran, and I come back to the Quran, there's a statement that says that it takes two persons to marry, but it only takes one person to get a divorce. Right. So in order to be married, both parties have to be fully engaged in the process. If one person decides that they don't want the marriage, then the divorce has already taken place right there. The paperwork just hasn't been done. That's already happened. So in terms of fighting for a marriage, it's like that can be, I would say, a futile path if the person that you're quote unquote fighting for is not interested in the marriage. Then person can really overwhelm their lives, their emotions, et cetera, trying to hold on to something that the other person actually doesn't want. And floating in and around these comments is the idea of love as it is perceived in the world at large, right? Because just like my comments that I talked about in terms of marriage, how, you know, you're not really married when you say, I do, I do. You have stuff that you call it, a pregnancy, right? you take the pregnancy test or you miss the cycle or whatever, however way you find out about it, then you say, oh, I'm pregnant, right? Okay, good. But you don't say, I have a baby. You don't say, I have a baby. No, you say you're pregnant. That's the name for getting started. So, I mean, we kind of like need two different words for being married and getting started at being married, right? So now you got to go through the labor before you can have the baby. Similarly, you got to go through the labor before you can have the marriage. But you hold on to the marriage. You hope that there's no abortion, i.e. divorce, or, you know, or miscarriage or what have you. But that also does happen sometimes by no particular thing that was done on the part of the parties involved, right? So I think that that analogy has to be brought into the question. Okay, but then when you stay with that metaphor and deal with it as prenatal care, then what it is that you do everything that you possibly can do and should do that could cause that baby to come to term, right? What does that mean? That means the right nourishment, the right demeanor, the right disposition, you know, all the things that you're supposed to do in order to make sure that baby is healthy. All right, so now, if something is going on, okay, with that, is there something going on genetically, something going on that you had no idea, nothing to do with that causes the life to terminate, then, well, it wasn't necessarily the fault of anyone per se. It was just something inside the particular makeup of that circumstance that didn't cause it to work. Now, let's go over to how do you decide, how do you make decisions about what to hold on to and what to let go of? Well, automatically it's understood that the background of a Muslim marriage is a Muslim who is practicing the religion, and therefore they pray, they pay the zakat, they fast, they carry themselves with the adab and the character that would be and should be pleasing to their Lord and to their mate, who ideally is also a Muslim, okay? And that being that kind of like, that's like the pre-care of the marriage, okay? While at the same time, during these adjustment periods that come about periodically during the term of the marital pregnancy, is that you have to make adjustments, right? Okay, but you make those adjustments, and the Quranic definition or the Quranic precept point that I prescribe is where it says, they asked you concerning what should they give in charity. And they said, then it says, hey, what is beyond your needs, right? So, listen, when both of us come into this marriage, then both of us come in with needs. It's not just one person has needs that has to be met. Both persons have needs that have to be met. One person's need is not more important than the needs of the other. It's a whole mutual process. It's a sharing. It's a giving. It's taking, yin and yang, right? So I have to look out for her needs. She has to look out for my needs. All right? But then sometimes we have to be charitable. You know, in fact, Imam Muhammad describes that, charity, the Christian idea of charity, the Christian idea of love is like the Islamic idea of charity. Okay, what Christians say about love is what Islam actually is meaning when it says about charity. Okay, so then if we take that that parallel and says, and what are they to give in charity, right? But then now let's change it. And what are they to give in love? What is beyond their needs, right? So if out of love, you know, you will do some things for the other person out of, quote, love, unquote, which is growing, okay, because you have to get to the realization and delivery of the baby for that real, capital L-O-V-E, love. But it's still love in the process of the germination of that ultimate goal. But if the other person is not giving, now we're back to that emotional bank account, right? If that other person is constantly withdrawing and not making any deposits, right, and you're constantly depositing and making withdrawals from your own and making deposits into theirs, well, pretty soon you're going to be broke and the marriage is going to be broke. And so therefore you have to decide that if this mutuality, if this shared commitment is really there, and again, what did you do? If the person is not contributing anything that you need to the marriage and you're contributing everything that they need to the marriage, well, then it's broke, right? So there is this rational, this balance that a person has to have, being charitable, being loving in the process, but not neglecting your own needs in the interest of saving marriage. What do you mean? Just to hold on to someone, and then that's not a marriage at all. There's this codependency. There's some kind of master-slave relationship going on there, and that's not marriage. That's not what I was not invited to. So sometimes there are deal breakers, but, you know, that's on a case-by-case basis.
Right, right. Okay, great. So the next one is number four, is marriage makes you examine yourself. Marriage can be the best personal growth tool on the market. If you're honest with yourself in your relationship, marriage will cause you to consciously examine your actions. It will also cause you to grow in ways that may be uncomfortable but beneficial in the long run. Well, you know that firsthand, yes?
In terms of self-examination?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, we see that all the time. I mean, just in this subject matter itself, you know, when it's about why you moved into really wanting to understand relationships. And from your background with your mother and you're now, and you being married now, this 41 years? Or we have 40?
It'll be 41 next July. This year, we're in our 40th year.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a major obligation to meet before the 40th year is over. I always keep saying, okay, I'm still in the 40th, But going to that idea about self-examination brings up the idea about the Bible, right? The Bible story, Genesis, where God made Adam in the Bible. And it said he saw that it was not good that man should be alone, right? Not good that man should be alone. And then what he did in the Bible story, he created Eve, or he made Eve in the Bible story from the rib of Adam. And then he said he gave her to him as a help meet. A help meet. It's called help meet. M-E-E-T. And that's what will happen when you marry. You will meet parts of yourself and parts of the other person that you had never met before. So marriage itself is a process of self-exposure, self-examination, self-revelation, and the like. That's one of the beautiful parts of Michelle Obama's speech that she gave last week sometime, where she said, the power of being in a position of power doesn't make you who you are. It reveals who you are, right? And that's what marriage does. Marriage reveals who you are. And so the self-examination is automatic. It's self-examination if you accept to see what the marriage is revealing about you, right? If you accept to see it and don't turn a blind eye to it, then it does become self-examination, because now you're examining what it is revealing to you about you.
All right, great. So number five, you won't know if you have unconditional love until conditions come to test it. The statement above was made in our latest film, Still Standing, by one of our featured couples. I loved it, and I think it says so much about marriage. We can often say that we love each other unconditionally, but we really never know until the conditions arrive. The only thing that is defined is that these conditions will come, so do your best to prepare for them beforehand. Well, as you stated earlier, there are always some conditions somewhere.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, as far as identifying identifying the challenges or identifying love, you know, you say when people get married, they say, you know, I'm in love. Well, no, you don't really know that yet until there's a process that happens to develop and grow that love in the relationship. And you won't really know that until those challenges or those situations or events take place within the marriage to say, you know what, I really love this person. Do you agree
right.
with that?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there was this definite moment in my marriage, our marriage, where I definitely blossomed and said, you know, I love you. So it's like, okay, it's really, you know, not, you know, and that there is that evolution. So when we talk about the growth and we talk about how you bring the marriage to term through this mutual duty and responsibility and sharing and commitment and the like, it will arrive. It does arrive, but it's just like walking, you know. The ideally the two legs have to be equal, you know, equal in their length, equal in their strength, and when they both keep walking, each one taking the step that each one is to take, then they both together arrive at that destiny, at that goal, at that marriage, at that state called love, right? So it's a goal, right? So the idea about love and marriage is a destiny, and I think that that points to what the world has got wrong and why things aren't working. They think that I love her, him, so let's get married. And so then because I love him, her, and we got married, so now I have both love and marriage, when in fact you don't have either one. You don't have either one. You're just getting started. You're just getting started. You're going to find out if and when you have love when it arrives. You're going to find out if and when you have marriage when your relationship survives to the point of the arrival of love, right? So you have to get in it, stay in it, that car, right, C-A-A-R. You got to get in the car, and you got to stay in that car until you get to the destiny of love and marriage. But divorce is getting out of the car, you know, and the car breaking down and it's not making any progress at all. Well, it's broke, right? So that's termination. That's miscarriage. That's abortion. All that. So and I think that's a very, very critical point to understand. The world got it backwards. Even when you look at the picture of a heart, right? When you look at the picture of a heart, the image of a heart, the way that it's given, is imbalanced.
Mm-hmm.
You look at that thing that they draw as a heart and set it on a level surface. Do you think it's going to stay like that? No.
No.
It's not going to stay like that. It's going to fall, right? Mm-hmm. And then most people talk about, I fell in love last night. I've fallen in love. Well, that's already a problem. When the last time you fell and it was a good thing, right? So falling is not a good thing. But how do you fall? You fall off balance. One of my good friends and associates, brother, talked about on one of our other blog programs that actually walking is a fall being corrected each time with a new step, right? So it's like when you're standing on your left foot, and you move your weight forward. When you sit your right foot down, it's catching the fall that was actually happening with the shift of balance, the shift of the center of gravity. So it's actually walking is a continuous falling, but being caught each time by a new step. So in the same way that we just talked about marriage, you have these two people, and they continue to fall, but they continue to catch each other, continue to fall, catch each other, and that's that C-A-A-R. They continue to adjust and adapt and recommit, adjust and adapt and recommit. And again, the process between assessment and recommitment, that gets broader and lesser, and that's just because you're getting nearer and nearer to the goal of love and marriage. So the idea of falling in love, when you turn that heart on, when you turn that heart over, the traditional heart that we're given in Western society, Valentine's Day heart, right? But turn it over and sit it that way, now it's more stable. It's more stable. And what do you have? You have two lobes. Right, you have two lobes. You have these two haunches, or whatever you want to call them, that provide the balance. Well, that's the male and the female in the balanced relationship growing together to where there is this one point. Now that point is that same, that common destiny where they cease to be two individuals they become one. Now you're in love, all right? And now you're married. So that symbol, if you would invert that symbol can be taken to describe the real foundation to healthy, whole, balanced individuals coming together with a commitment to aim toward one destiny. And in the Arabic language, the actual number five, the number five is very much like the heart in this imagery that we're talking about, but the heart turned upside down. And so what does that suggest to us? It suggests to us that if our heart was intelligent, if we bring intelligence, if we use common sense in connection with our emotionality, when we are and as we are married, it better equips us, providing the foundation for achieving the destiny of love and marriage, which is something that doesn't start at the beginning. It's something that comes as a destiny. And so you talk about the journey is the thing. The journey is the thing. And so when you take that journey together, that's a part of your blessing as well.
Right. Excellent. All right, so the next one is, you will disagree, so learn to deal with it. Let's get this straight. You will have disagreements. You will argue. Everything will not always be perfect, and that's okay. Some people go into marriage thinking that something is wrong if you don't always agree with your spouse. What's more important is how to handle the disagreements when they surface. So that goes back to that level of communication. How do you communicate when you're having a disagreement and move beyond that and keeping in mind your mate's feelings as you're expressing how you feel about a certain situation, if you're having a heated exchange on whatever the topic may be? That what are some tools that you could think of that you may use as far as like during times of arguments or disagreement that you may have with your wife?
Absolutely. That's also another staple of the Merriam conferences, and we always want to invite our listeners to, we need to get out there and bring the whole conference, because the conference actually covers in detail much of this subject matter. But the communication portion of the Merriam conference is a big part, just like the temperament. Communication is a big part of it. But for the sake of time here, critical thing is to know these two sets of distinction. You need to know the difference between a misunderstanding and a disagreement, and you need to know the difference between an argument and a fight, right? Know the difference between arguing and fighting and the difference between misunderstanding and disagreement. A misunderstanding is something that can be cleared up by more information, right? That is, the person says one thing and does one thing, and then it causes this quote-unquote heated exchange. But then if you survive long enough to and are patient enough with your mate to be able to get clarification, then when you get the clarification, say, oh, I thought you meant such-and-such, but you meant so-and-so. Oh, okay, fine. I agree with that. I don't have any problem with that. All right, well, then that is a demonstration of the fact that what you had was a misunderstanding. You didn't have a disagreement. Misunderstanding can be cleared up by more information about whatever is in dispute. All right, but a disagreement is something that can only be cleared up by a higher authority that each one either does or has to respect. So in terms of a disagreement, more information doesn't necessarily resolve the dispute, because a person can say, so when you say this, you mean that. Yeah, that's what I meant. Okay, well, I disagree with that. Okay? So you have a disagreement, and so what's going to resolve it? The only thing that can resolve it is a higher authority that each one does or has to respect. I say has to respect because the court may be involved in a matter. Okay, court makes a decision, and you're going to go with the court's judgment. If you're a Muslim, it's quote-unquote duty-bound, open-hearted, et cetera, to what Allah and the Prophet has revealed, and if you have a living model that can prescribe for you from those sources what might be the answer to your dispute, and you accept their decisions in the matter, well, then therein there's the resolution because you have a higher authority that you both have accepted. When it comes to arguing and fighting, arguing, you know, in marriage is, again, in the course of this pregnancy that is called marriage, there's going to be a lot of arguments, just like, in fact, we can add to the C-A-A-R, we have commitment, arguing, you know, commitment, arguing, adjusting, then assessment, et cetera. So I guess we're in a limousine now, because it's a stretch. Because there are going to be arguments, right? But the arguments are always aimed at reconciliation. You argue, but the goal is to come to a point where we can agree, where we can reconcile ourselves in this particular dispute. Okay, so that's an argument, right? In the longer the marriage is, the more arguments there have been, right? But again, as it is with growth and development, the space between arguments gets longer and longer and longer. The space between assessment periods gets longer and longer and longer because what you're getting closer and closer to that reconciliation, that oneness, that unity that we call the state of marriage. Okay, but fighting is a different story. Fighting, the object of a fight is only to hurt the other person. It's not, and whatever you're saying, whatever you're doing in this particular dispute is not driving the situation towards reconciliation or resolution. All it's doing is driving you further and further apart and bruising each other emotionally, and hopefully not physically, but sometimes, yes, physically. So fights are just aimed at hurting the other person. So when you start calling names and start cursing and start speaking bad about relatives and all that kind of thing, you're fighting. You're not arguing. There's no resolution for that. So critical thing is to understand the difference between arguing and fighting, between disagreement and misunderstanding.
All right. Excellent. So number 7 is, the real reason for divorce is, take a guess, is it infidelity, finances, communication breakdown? The real reason behind most divorces is that at least one person is not willing to do what's required to maintain the relationship. That could be counseling, compromise, personal growth, and development. This is the difference between couples who go through these major issues and make it or those who do not. After what you were saying earlier, you had mentioned this, is that it's two people to get married. It only takes one to get a divorce.
That's right.
And, you know, at some point, the dissolve happens when, we just can't meet. You can't meet or having a like mind as far as like making this work, or one just is kind of giving up
with
this process.
Right.
That is what can continue to pull a relationship apart.
Right. Yeah. And so, really, I mean, to answer that, we can say see the above, because
right.
that is it. You know, it takes two to be married. But that does speak to nourishment, right? Yeah, think about it. You know, nourishing the relationship. I think the pregnancy analogy is an excellent analogy for, you know, what really is involved in marriage. I think it follows all the way through. So in the same way, in terms of, because if a person starts checking out of the marriage, then the question has to be, when did they start checking out of the marriage? And why did they start checking out of the marriage? What was it that they needed that they weren't getting? Now, the point is, now, whether their needs were quote unquote legitimate needs in the context of the other party or not is a separate question. But the point is that if the person's needs are being met, that's, of course, one of the reasons that person starts to check out of the relationship. Those needs could be personal needs, psychological needs, as it relates to something else that they're trying to do. Let's say they're working on a business, or they're working on a career, or they're working on some other project, and the project is not working out well. And so as a result, they start checking out. It didn't have anything to do with the person that they were married to, per se, but it had to do with their failure with regard to something else that they were aspiring to. So, but the point is that needs to be known and understood, and the other person to be in touch with the person well enough to be able to know if something is not going well for them, and then that particular circumstance could have undermining effects on the marriage. So it's a part of the managing of the marriage process that each party needs to be checking in with the other person to know is there a drift here, right? And there's another aspect of it too, is that part of being married is actually having the same story. Meaning have the same story, either the one or the one that you're writing that keeps you together and that will ultimately bring you to that point of unity at the end. I think that it's just so important that husband and wife be dedicated to something that is either similar in quality or quantity or spirit or domain or something. There has to be a unity between what the other, what each one of them is aspiring to, so that you can have this mutual cooperation, mutual support for each other as each one quests to realize what it is they're aspiring to. And the more in common they have as a goal and what they aspire to as a goal, then the better it is for the strength of the relationship. And the more diverse it is, the more challenging it's going to be in order to hold that together.
All right, great. So number 8 is the wedding day is not the pinnacle of your relationship. This was a statement from Aja Danzler, one half of the husband and wife duo Kindred, the family soul. Aja was spot on with this. So many newlyweds prepare more for their wedding day than they do for the marriage. Don't let this happen to you. I think that goes to the idea, the fantasy in the mind about, you know, people say they want this fantasy fairy tale wedding. You know, they want this moment, you know, and that it gives them that opportunity that when you have this all these planning around getting married, that there's no conversation about the ins and outs of what is going to preserve and make this relationship work. So when you start to have those kinds of conversations prior to, like when what we do in Islam with doing our contracts or having those harder conversations that, hey, you know, there's still an agreement that's taking place here, not just this one day big extravaganza, that we have to think about, well, how are we going to live our day-to-day life together in a marriage?
Yeah, it's very important. I have a friend who, I have a friend, they're still living, just haven't seen him for a while. They said that the longevity of a marriage is inversely related to the amount of money that's spent on the wedding. It's inversely related to the amount of money that's spent on the wedding. You know, your mother and I, we got married in the devil's, because he was devil's at that time. We were married in 72, right? And so we wasn't going to go to preach and be married. And as Muslims, we weren't doing imam marriages, et cetera. So even the ministers of Nation Islam weren't conducting marriages. Imagine that. So in any case, so we had to go to the devil's courtroom, you know, the judge's chambers, to have the marriage done, right? So there was no. I think my mother was the only witness, really. I think she kind of and just got there somewhat. But the point is that how much did we spend on the marriage?
Yeah,
nothing. Basically, you know. But how long we've been married, right? So the idea is that there, if you take my life and our life as an example, then there may be some merit to that statement, you know, that the longevity of the marriage is inversely proportional to the amount of money that's spent on the wedding. Because that is true. Some people, they overinvest in such a way that it undermines the stability, the economic stability of the marriage. One other thing on that, Imam Muhammad earlier on when he talked to us about marriage, the idea, now y'all bring gifts now. Everybody who's listening, everybody who hears this, make sure you continue to give gifts to the couples that are being married. I'm not advocating don't bring gifts and all that. But in Al-Islam, it's the couple that is supposed to, you know, give the walima for the community as, again, a gesture, just as the man has to bring the mahir, bring the dowry to the woman as a demonstration of the fact that she can depend on him and that he's not coming to her as a dependent. On the flip side of that, or an extension of that, is that the couple provides a walima for the community to show that they also will be making a contribution to the community as opposed to coming into the community for the community to take care of them. But in this society, and I think a couple of times it's come out in our conversation today, how things are so turned around in this society. Everybody's supposed to bring the couple gifts, right? Bring the couple gifts. What does that do for the male's responsibility to take care of the needs of the household? Somebody bringing the sheets, somebody bringing the pots and the pans, somebody bringing the dishes, somebody bringing this, that, or the other. Okay, well then, what does that do for the man's responsibility for, you know, appointing his house or fixing his house, establishing and supplying the needs of the household when you try to get it all paid for on the list that you set on the web or what have you? So it kind of undermines a part of what the aspiration of marriage is for. The aspiration of marriage is to requisition more of the potential of the man, more of the potential of the couple, for them to evolve and grow. But the world has put it such that you're supposed to bring us gifts, not us giving gifts to you. Right? So the idea is that, you know, don't get it twisted. Don't undermine yourself in the process. You have to be aware of that.
All right, so number 9 is everyone will not be happy about your marriage. A lot of people have to learn this tough fact the hard way. Some of your friends or even family may not share your joy for one reason or another. It's your responsibility not to let negativity affect your marriage regardless of where it arises. Stand strong with your spouse and your marriage will prosper.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty strange, as far as like negativity, not allowing negative thoughts or, you know, jealousy even to bleed into your decision to be married or being married. But I think that it's important not to negate not listening if there are some valid questions in regards to who you're choosing. You know, it's like,
yeah,
that you got to be clear about the questions that you ask about why a certain family member or someone that you care about feels a certain way, and being open to listening if, in fact, it's a valid point that you need further investigating.
Yeah. That, you know, that's kind of from my experience and knowledge, it's kind of a two-edged sword in this regard. One, women are by the grace of Allah and by their design, are better judges of character than men, generally speaking. You can draw this from Brain Sex, B-R-A-I-N Sex, the book by Anne Moir, M-O-I-R, first name Anne Moir. And you break down the differences between the, let's call it the wiring of the males and the females, physiologically, neurobiologically, and what that brings to the table for as far as the, you know, their living experience. And so God has endowed the woman with a greater capacity to assess character. So, yes, there are women who have your best interest at heart who may be able to give you some cues and some clues to protect you from making a bad decision. And I would suspect that the more mature the woman is, the greater she is at doing that. I have one of the stories from my mother. I won't share it here, but it just simply, there was one of my sisters up in like this. One of my sisters was about to marry a guy that my mother was saying, you know, she was saying that this is not the guy. And right in the presence of this guy, because my mother was not shy, she was very straightforward, straight shooting, straight talking woman, she told my sister, she said, if you don't marry this guy, I will send you wherever you want to go in the world. He meant it. He's like, if you don't marry him, I'll send you anywhere. She's telling him, don't marry this guy. And she was absolutely positively right. She just wound up marrying the guy, and what my mother said proved to be true, right? So I say that the more mature the woman is and the more that she has your interest at heart, then the more her information, her advice should be trusted. So I think as when you talk about Waleed, I think older women may be better Walis than what we might be thinking about having him now to be Walis or anything like that. Okay, that's one side of it. The other side of it is there's another myth that carries some important information about psychic development for women, and the name of this book is called She, and it's by Robert A. Johnson. And there's a trilogy of books, He, She, and We. But when he deals with She, he deals with the myth of Psyche, P-S-Y-C-K-E-T-H-E, Psyche. And anybody interested, you should get it and read it, especially women, you should read it, because it shows you about your challenge of becoming an individuated person. And it's definitely valid. But the point is that a part of the story is that Psyche's sisters are jealous of the situation that Psyche has come into, because her husband in the myth is actually a god, you know, the god Eros. But she doesn't know it, but the girls know it. And so they were being jealous of her. They began to undermine her trust, undermine her attributive way of being in the marriage by allowing those sisters to create suspicion in her about her husband. And ultimately, it led to the end of the marriage. So women can also be very powerful undermining factors for a marriage. So you have to really be cautious about who you advise from and who you share the state of your marriage with, because they may not have your best interest at heart.
Okay, excellent. And our last one is, a good spouse makes you better. This is something that people who are married should promote more. Our culture promotes the myth that when you get married, you're losing something. It could be freedom, money, potential opportunities for fun, etc. The truth is that an amazing marriage will propel you to new heights. Fueled by unparalleled support system you will find in your spouse. So it's that having that team, you know, having that teammate, you know, that you're not only filled by yourself, you're not going through this life by yourself, and they promote you wanting to be better and being a better individual, or they invested in you reaching your true potential, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And it's as we said, in terms of Bali, right, in marriage, marriage in the Arabic terminology is Bali, and it is a plant or a landmass enjoying the benefit of natural irrigation. Now, Bali means a man taking a woman as a wife, or a woman taking a man as a husband. That's Bali. So Bali is marriage, right? And so when you have that marriage, the marriage, I'm thinking about this word, marriage. Marriage is a process right there. When you say marriage, right, I hear in that word process. It is a process, right? And so then when you go through the process, then you become married, right? So marriage is a process. It's a process, by which each one mutually irrigates and mutually cultivates, mutually nourishes the other, and so each one realizes their innate potential by that marriage. So, yes, it does continue. And that also points to another, as we said, another, they mentioned it in their statement, another backward myth about marriage and love in a society. You think you're losing something, but you're also gaining. You're gaining something. In fact, you're gaining more than you're losing, because you still have who you were and what you were when you came, and now you're going to become more than what you were before you married if you execute in the process of marriage what you should in that marriage. You'll become much more. In Al-Islam, another thing that we say in the marriage khutbah sometimes is that the ring is not an obligation, but it's acceptable in Al-Islam. It's not an obligation. But when you have the ring is doing two things. It is circumscribing, so it is cutting off some boundaries that you used to have, but then it's also opening up some areas that you didn't have before. And that's the nature of it. And so it is even with the seed, right? We talked about death and life in the beginning. You die as an individual and you come to birth as a couple. And then as a couple, then you actually cease to be a couple and you become this one unit, right? This nafsun wahida all over again with this evolution. So in the same way, you know, you actually, this transformation is a transformation that is a constant process in the marriage.
All right, excellent. So our time is winding down. We do have some listeners. If you have any questions, feel free to press 1 on your phone. We can acknowledge you, and you'll have an opportunity to ask your questions. But just to review the 10 things on the list that we had spoken about is that, you know, marriage will not fit. This was brought from an article, from a blog article that someone had written about, you know, 10 things that a single person should consider when seeking out to be married. And we just shared our thoughts and made an exchange about them. And you can find this article on a website called Babel Voices. And you just look up the article by Lamar Tyler, and you will find those articles. And they put articles up on a regular basis. And they also have a website, Black and Married with Kids is also a part of that website. Okay, so the first one was marriage will not fill a void in your life. That looking for marriage to be the thing that completes you as an individual is not the right focus, but for you to be a complete individual entering into marriage. 2, that marriage is not 50-50, meaning that you want to come whole. You want to be 100% of yourself. You want to give 100% of yourself in the marriage, and that is the exchange that should happen between you and your spouse. 2, there are no deal breakers. Now, we did have a little asterisk under that. There are some deal breakers in regards to marriage, and we did discuss those things. But at the same time, it's not about giving up. It's not about, you know, entering into a marriage for the purpose of giving up, but having two individuals who are equally or mutually invested in the salvation and the preservation of their marriage. Next one is marriage makes you examine yourself. You look at the way you think about things, your level of patience. It makes you look at, you know, how you communicate or how you interact with your family or with your spouse, how you deal with stress levels. It does all of these things. Marriage will make you examine yourself. Next one, you won't know if you have unconditional love until conditions come to test it. And when we say that the conditions will come to test it, is that, you know, you grow in love. It's not something that just automatically pops up. There's a process within the marriage that gets you to a level of love or gets you to a place where you can genuinely say, I love this person. And then are you willing to go on that journey to discover this love with the person that you are deciding to marry and spend your life with? The next one was you will disagree, so learn to deal with it. That there will be times that you will agree, there will be times that you will disagree. And in those times of disagreement, it's about clearly identifying, what did we say, if it's a misunderstanding or an argument or if it's a fight, were those the things that...
Yeah, the pairs are arguing and fighting, disagreement and misunderstanding. Those are the pairs. So the parents,
right. And so in a disagreement, it's just, it could be solved with more information.
The other way around.
Oh.
Misunderstandings, more information.
Okay.
Disagreement, higher authority.
Got you. Okay. Okay, great. So then with that higher authority, mean that we approach that through, as Muslims, we go to the Quran, we go to the life example of the Prophet to help us to... you know, get to the clarity or the truth of a particular situation.
Yes, ideally, yes.
Ideally. that's the ideal. Okay.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
an argument and fight were the other two?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that a fight is just for the purpose of hurting the other individual. There's nothing,
right.
There's no other goal in a fight other than
right.
the other individual. And
right.
that's a no-go. with after
right.
we don't want to get to the place of a fight.
Right.
Okay, great. Okay, next one is the real reason for divorce. The real reason for divorce is not all of the things that we think of that are obstacles, but at some point there is an individual within the marriage that wishes not to do what is expected to preserve the marriage. And that when that happens, that is what ends a marriage. That is the real reason of divorce, that there's only one person in the marriage and the other person is just not there or not present and ready to be a part of that relationship. And
right.
Number eight was the wedding day is not the pinnacle of your relationship. That we put a lot of, we have a culturally, we may have a tendency to put more focus and planning around creating this one day, this wedding day, and not putting that same level of focus and planning into the marriage and having those kinds of conversations about, well, how are we going to communicate? How are we going to solve a disagreement? How are we going to approach when I'm uncomfortable? Or how are we going to communicate certain things, you know? So having those kind of conversations prior to getting married, put the same level of energy and effort into planning your life together as you do in planning out your wedding day.
Absolutely.
And then the next one, everyone will not be happy about your marriage. That, you know, taking into consideration what are true, where the person that's bringing you the information is coming from. Is it to hurt you? Is it out of jealousy? Or is it out of genuine concern? Someone who says, look, this is something that I recognize and I'm communicating this to you in order for you to make a clearer decision about whom it is that you're deciding to marry. But at the same time, also knowing that, you know, there may be jealous individuals that will bring negativity into your relationship, and you have to learn how to not let negative influences come into your relationship that can possibly cause that relationship to dissolve. And the last
mm-hmm.
one is a good spouse makes you better. And that good spouse making you better, that you're a team, you know. It's just like when I throw that shot out, you there for the rebound. You know, we're a team, and that it makes you better, it makes you stronger, it pushes you forward. They are there to be your ultimate support. They want to see you reach your fullest potential, and that you work together to ensure that you both reach your own both individual goals. So those were the 10 things that we have brought out. And, you know, there's always, I think it's always a never-ending list, and it's an individualized list as well, that when you start to think about, you know, things that you want to consider in seeking out your ideal mate and when you're preparing yourself to be married, I think that it's also important to have conversations with those people that you trust about what it is that you're looking for when you're seeking out a mate, because sometimes you can get feedback or saying, you know, maybe that's not a realistic expectation, or they'll say, well, maybe you should consider this as well within the things that you're saying, within the list that you've created or ideas around things that you need to do around yourself and making sure that you're prepared for marriage. So any closing comments that you may have about this particular topic? We weren't able to get to the audio, but hey, mashallah, we'll have another opportunity to share that out with our audience. But I still also, before you close out, I want to let our listeners know, those that are listening on the computer, you could just go ahead and put your question in the chat box if you have it. Feel free to put that in there and we can address those things. And anyone on the phone, if you're on the phone, you just press the number 1 on your phone. And when you press the number 1, we'll open up your mic and we'll be ready to hear from you any questions or comments that you may have to share from our conversation today. Okay. So to you, Brother Imam, any closing comments or things?
No, I think that is pretty comprehensive in terms of it. I think we touched on at least, I would say at least 80%, probably higher, of the matters that should actually be addressed on such a topic. So, I mean, I would actually put this among the top 10 of subject matter being addressed around, I mean, this actual program of time that we've spent together, something critical. I think it's even if we were to call it a sampler of critical things that you need to know about, I think it's excellent, and I'm satisfied.
All right, excellent. So at this time, maybe we could just kind of close out with some wonderful tunes from Brother Rashad, if we have some. And once again,
Maybe somebody.
Oh wow! So you want to play that love?
Well, actually, that one, unfortunately, I don't have it. Is that that love? I'm going to play the longer one.
Okay.
Tell us the thought behind this. When I
wrote that particular song, I was thinking about it was about relationships. It was about the ideal of, you know, someone that's ready for the battle cry. Like, you know, it's like, are we going to go on this journey and enter into this life? Okay, we have this moment. You know, okay, what are we going to do today to make today better? And waking up with that same idea that, you know, it's like the challenges that happen around us and in the world, that it's like, I can't do it by myself, you know? So, hey,
all right.
You know, we got to get up and we got to get out and do this together, you know?
So that's what that was.
So if we're going to close out with that, that's a great choice. Good stuff.
And it's a perfect fit. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. And thank you, Mahasan.
Thank you.
And here is Mahasan.
Hey, oh, oh, oh. Hey. If